something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Joshua Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Jerry is over there. Just Jerry. And that's Stuff You Should Know.
That she has a new sitcom out on FX called Just Jerry.
Suddenly Jerry.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Why do you ask?
Well, don't mean to intrude. Just checking.
Yeah, I know.
I'm excited about this. When I first read our article, I was a little bit like, ooh, this is a little unwieldy because it's so folklore. It's just...
It's amorphous.
As it turns out, it's everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
But then you sent, what was that other good article from? Actually, we should shout that out.
It was from the University of Louisiana or something like that. They have a folklore department.
Yes.
And it was basically, we stumbled upon some unit for teachers to teach what folklore is. And we're like, hey, it works for us.
Super helpful.
Yeah, it was very helpful. It took a lot of this amorphous stuff that was in our article and chipped away at the edges and gave it a little more shape, you know?
Agreed.
So, you did kind of hit it on the head. It's kind of like, nailing jelly to the wall, defining what folklore is because it is so much stuff.
That phrase is folklore.
If it isn't just me saying it, if I share it and now other people say it, it could become Stuff You Should Know folklore, oral folklore.
Did you make that up?
I think I've heard it before.
Okay. So that's folklore.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a variation though of, what else did I hear? Oh yeah, we were talking about the nuclear fusion reactor, where they were saying that keeping plasma contained is kind of like trying to hold jelly in a bunch of rubber bands.
Yeah, that's nerd science folklore.
That's what inspired me to say nailing jelly to the wall.
I like that.
Yeah.
It seems like it really sums it up.
So folklore.
Yeah, I found this other definition I thought was pretty good, which is traditional art, literature, knowledge, and practice that is disseminated largely through oral communication and behavioral example. And then this was the key for me. Things that people traditionally believe, do, know, make, and say. In other words, everything.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Everything. That's about as good a definition as you're going to find. One of the problems with studying folklore is that there are so many definitions out there. Apparently, folklorists, who are people who study folklore, don't like to be too judgy. It's kind of part and parcel with their field of study. You don't judge stuff. You just collect information.
Right.
The problem is that they've also just kind of collected definitions for folklore along the way, and there isn't one set definition that's accepted by everybody.
Yeah. A folklorist that collected stuff and was like, that's stupid.
Right.
It wouldn't be good.
It's so dumb.
It wouldn't be a good folklore.
Why are you guys doing that?
That's a good TV show, The Bad Folklorist. And I might say folk here and there because I mispronounce that word often, and I'm trying.
How are you saying it?
Well, a lot of times I'll say the L. In fact, up until about a year ago when someone wrote in and said, you stupid, it's pronounced folk, like F-O-K-E.
Folk.
And not folk.
But the weird thing is like I hear the L missing when I hear folk.
Oh, weird. That's some sort of
like I don't hear F-O-K-E. Like, it's clear to me that there's a F-O-L-K in there.
You hear the silence?
It's a great word. F-O-L-K. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. And another thing, too, that we should point out that folklorists love to point out is that it is not and should not be associated with being backward or old-timey or uneducated. Like, I think a lot of people have that connotation in their heads that folklore is like the hillbilly on the porch, you know, when they're homespun wisdoms. And it can be that, but it's not that at all. Like, it's not just that.
Right. A really good example that contradicts that is Snopes. Snopes.com is basically a clearinghouse of modern folklore.
Oh, yeah. Never really thought about that.
You know, the Nigerian prince scam, that's folklore.
Yeah, it sure is.
Emoticons even are considered now a form of verbal communication, verbal folklore.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's everything. And the reason it's everything is because it comes out of groups. Like if I just have a habit, you know, where I keep a rubber band twisted around my finger until it turns purple, and then I'll take it off for half an hour and then do it again. That's just some weird habit. That's not
sure.
Folklore. Folklore is something that's shared between a group.
Yeah, and those groups can be like almost anything. That great article you sent that says neighborhoods, communities, and regions, but also religious groups, families, occupations, gender, like pretty much any grouping. Enthusiasts, hobbyists, anything you can think of that you can group more than two people together, it can be a folk group.
Right, exactly. You can have like a Catholic dockyard worker who is also a member of an RC plane club.
Yeah.
Who also is a member of a book club at the local library.
Right.
So that one person is going to be a member of all those different folk groups, and all those folk groups are going to have their own folklore.
True. Yeah, you're right. That's another good thing to point out is you're not just in one group. You span many, many groups. And, for instance, I have family folklore. We have probably occupational folklore, you know, the old podcaster folklore
right.
for us and our colleagues.
Right.
and my gender and my age and, religious affiliation growing up. Like, we all have many, many groups and subgroups that we fall into.
Right. And we get our information from that.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think has been tricky about defining folklore is that it's not obvious necessarily what folklore is for.
Yeah.
Not at first blush, but if you go and read some of the people who study it, the idea of folklore is that one of the main things it does is it reinforces membership in a group.
Yeah.
It makes you feel special for being part of that group.
Yeah, being so an insider. Yeah.
And then it also reinforces the norms of that group. Like, folklore is based on basically norms, customs, traditions, things that the members of the group have said, this is what, you know, we identify with.
Yeah, and not always too, as that teaching site points out, not always reinforcing those norms, sometimes overturning those norms.
Yeah, like a good way to overturn the norm is to take an existing norm and turn it on its ear.
Right.
Because it makes it really approachable to the other people in your folk group.
Yeah.
They understand what you're doing very clearly, and
yeah.
It gives them a different perspective.
Right.
Or using the traditional channels.
Yeah, like I think one example I saw somewhere was taking a traditional folk song maybe and adding verses to it to spin its meaning to the opposite, perhaps.
Right.
Like Bob Dylan. He's famous for stealing things.
Sure. Or Jimmy Page.
Oh, yeah. Have you heard that song? The Zeppelin or the Stairway to Heaven lawsuit?
No. Whose song was it originally?
I can't remember the name. I mean, this is not news. It's been around for a while. But, yeah, I mean, they've been sued. It was a group that opened up for Zeppelin on an early tour. And supposedly played this song. And I think Zeppelin has, I haven't looked it up lately, but I think they have defeated the suit. But when you hear the song, you're like, oh, that sounds a little bit like the opening bit to Stairway to Heaven.
So it was like the music, it wasn't like any of the lyrics.
Yeah, that opening, guitar strumming pattern, was pretty darn similar. But, as any musician will tell you, everybody steals. There's only so many variations of chords and picking patterns that you can do. And it's just part of the rich tradition of music is to nick things respectfully, not, you know.
Not Ghostbusters, I want a new drug kind of feeling.
Yeah, I mean, that's when your lawsuits come up.
It's not just music that there's that long tradition of stealing, or nicking or whatever you want to, euphemism you want to use. It's literature is very much the same way. There's something like 5 or 10 themes in all of literature and everything else is just basically a variation of them.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that folklorists have learned through studying folklore is that we humans share what can be called basically a common imagination. That humans across time and space, all have a certain number of slots of looking at the world. Certain things in the world capture the human imagination in a similar way in all different parts of the world, and we tend to use similar explanations for them. So you'll have independently evolving folklore among groups who've never met before, that seek to explain, or have a story about something that is just kind of out there in the environment.
Yeah, that's a good point. One of the examples of that is, in folklore, stories, our frogs and toads can be found in all kinds of old stories in all cultures all over the world that, I mean, it's possible too if you're close to one another, like, Korea and China, may have stories that overlap one another just through a common geographical boundary. But stuff like frogs and toads will pop up, you know, let's say in Europe or, medieval Europe or in Asia, mm-hmm. like places that aren't even close to one another where it's inexplicable basically.
Right. And they'll share like a similar, personality or something in the story. So like frogs and toads are commonly thought of as shape-shifting tricksters.
Yeah, and I think this article points out that that's probably because they go from tadpole to frog or mm-hmm. toad and they change themselves physically. So it's you know, the old dummies back in the day, they would just use that obvious thing to make up a story.
Obviously, they can become human, too, since they go from tadpole to frog.
Exactly, like the frog prince.
And you mentioned also shared regional characteristics that are most likely the result of stories making it from one group to another, crossing borders.
Yeah.
But among groups that are close together, and that example you gave of East Asia, Japan and Korea, Thailand, China, they all have the idea that there's a rabbit in the moon and he's using a mortar and pestle. And what that would be is a motif. Like all of them have this shared idea that there's a rabbit in the moon, right?
Yes.
But then there's what are called variations of that motif. So in Japan and Korea, the rabbit's making mochi, which is a sweet, squishy rice cake that often has like something even sweeter injected in, like red bean sweetness, right? In China, the rabbit is making medicine.
Yeah.
In Thailand, he's husking rice.
Yeah.
So you have variations on what the rabbit is doing, but the motif is, if you look up at the moon, there's a rabbit doing something up there.
Yeah, and like we said, it's most likely because of a shared border or just because simply people moving between those countries.
So we'll talk about where folklore comes from, friends, if you can believe it or not, right after this.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chuckers.
Yo.
So we're back. We're talking folklore. We should also say folklore is actually a fairly recent word. It was coined in 1846 by a guy named William J. Toms.
Yeah.
He was an early antiquarian. He was also very interested in studying what has now come to be called folklore.
Yeah, or folk life, we should point out. That's a modern term that
right.
People, folklore is like even more.
Yeah, because folklore has this connotation that that it has to do with stories, oral traditions.
Yeah, or even not true things, because you've heard like, oh, that's just folklore, like an old wives' tale.
Yeah, exactly. So they've expanded it to include or to reflect how inclusive it is by calling it folk life. But William Toms came up with folklore, and it was originally hyphenated. And he was describing these stories that he would go out into the countryside and collect from folk. Like, he published a book of, like, English rural stories that included things like Robin Hood and Friar Tuck and some of the other stories that have become Disneyfied over the years. Yeah. This guy originally put down for the first time on pen and paper and became one of the early folklorists.
Yeah, and didn't they call just anyone living in rural areas, weren't they just called folk?
Right.
Which is why we sort of associate it as like being a bumpkin today.
Yeah.
But I use that word all the time. In fact, on the Facebook wall here, that's my most common way of addressing the Stuff You Should Know Army is, hey, folks.
Oh, I know.
It just sounds like chummy folksy to me.
Yeah. It's very folksy.
Folksy. There you go.
Yeah. Hey, folks.
So there are a bunch of innumerable groups, really, that pass along folklore.
And they're called folk groups.
Folk groups. But we can group them generally.
Not folk groups. Like Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Yeah, sure.
But folk groups.
Yeah.
I think I said it with the L just now, didn't I?
Maybe.
Huh.
I like it. It's called regional diction.
Okay.
People get all hung up on that stuff. You guys say this wrong.
What's weird, though, is like neither one of us sound like Southerners.
Yeah, not really.
And I mean, like, you were born here and you don't sound like a Southerner.
Yeah, I have certain colloquialisms, though, like, have your picture made.
Oh, yeah, that or is like, definitely Southern.
Sometimes I'll say, like, you mash a button instead of push a button.
Yeah.
And I think people should embrace things like that, regional dialect.
Right.
Instead of getting all hung up on the Queen's English or the King's English. See? Right there.
Yeah, that's regional, I imagine.
Either one. The Prince's English.
It's that what you're talking about is antithetical to globalization, Chuck.
Oh, really?
Sure.
Look at you.
Regionalism?
Smarty pants.
Well, I mean, that's counter to globalization. Globalization is turning the earth into one large village with all these shared values and everything. Regionalism is saying, like, no, we'll just stay as pockets of interacting groups that have our own values and traditions and customs.
I like that.
Sure.
I think it's on the brain because I posted something today on words that are mispronounced.
Oh, yeah?
A lot. And
What's up there?
Oh, I mean, also like banal and Dr. Seuss supposedly pronounced his name as
Seuss.
Again, I can't remember how he pronounced it, but it's just like common words you're probably mispronouncing, and "the" was on there. And someone said, you guys always pronounce "the" wrong, because Yeah, exactly. Supposedly there's a rule. Not supposedly, I think there is a rule.
You mean supposedly?
Well, that wasn't on there. Well, that's different. That's just saying the wrong word. But I think "the," you should say "the" when the following noun starts with a vowel, like "the apple," not "the apple." But you could say,
yeah, I could see that.
You could say the test.
Cause the apple almost sounds like it's TH apostrophe apple.
Yeah. And I get it, but
the
that's,
apple.
It's just sort of a regional thing. I think in the South, you might hear more the than the snotty New Englanders who.
I've never really paid that much attention to that one.
I haven't either.
Huh. You know why? Because we are laid back.
That's right. All right. So what were we talking about? We're talking about people who spread the groups, the folk groups.
One of not folk groups, though.
No, not Peter, Paul, and Mary. One of them is children. And this is a really big one because when you think about going back to your childhood, everything, like the games, like hide-and-seek, hopscotch, this article pointed out how you decide who's it. Like, that is super specific to your region.
But also, not just that, the differences regionally, but think about how intricate some of the rules were some of those games. Like, they were, like, really well thought out,
sure,
intricate rules that no one ever wrote down.
Oh, no, no.
They were just passed. Yeah. You knew it from observation, imitation, orally.
Yeah.
Like, somebody told you, but no one handed you a flyer called, like, kick the can and you know?
Well, one kid did, but he didn't.
No one liked that kid. He learned the hard way not to do that.
What was your, how did you decide who was it? I'm sure you probably had a go-to.
Well, the author of this article mentions bubblegum in a dish.
I'd never heard that.
I have heard that.
Okay.
I love that one. The images it evokes, like, how many pieces do you wish? And then you go, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Somebody says how many they want, and then you count out between 2 or 3 people, like 7, and then whatever you land on, that person's it, right?
Yeah.
Usually we did dirty, dirty dish rag, though.
See, I'd never heard of that one either.
Your mother and my mother were hanging out close. My mother socked your mother in the nose.
Never heard it.
What came after that?
That's misogynistic and violent.
Something, it really was. Something else happens after that, and then it just suddenly goes to, and you are it, you dirty, dirty dish rag, you.
We did, there were 3 that I remember very strongly. The 1 potato, 2 potato, engine, number 9.
Yeah.
Going down Chicago line, if the train should dump the track, do you want your money back?
Oh, yeah, I forgot that one. Sure.
And then...
maybe so. Who maybe so wanted their money back? Of course you want your money back if the train derails.
No, that's the kid who just wanted to get along.
I guess so.
And then Eeny Meeny is the other one.
Sure.
Eeny Meeny Miny Moe, catch a tiger by the toe.
Yeah.
If he hollers, let him go.
Eeny Meeny.
Was that it?
Miny Moe.
And then we also, there were variations on, you know, usually counting out, like I'm making my 2 hands locked together. We would do like that, and then when you landed on them, you would split them into 2 fists, and then count each one.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
So there were lots of variations, and that goes down to the neighborhood you live in,
right?
You know, it's like, that specific.
Yeah, we would also just leg wrestle for domination.
Really?
And then that person would choose who was it.
I've never leg wrestled.
It's not fun.
Yeah, I didn't even know what it is, really.
It's exactly what it sounds like.
I mean, I think I've seen it. You lay on the ground and lock legs.
Yeah.
Like, there's no other body parts involved.
Right. I mean, you're just basically on your back, up on your elbows, using your legs to
do what,
somebody
though?
Else's
what's the objective?
Basically make the other person cry or stop, shout to stop.
But it's not. There's not, like, a pinning or, like an arm wrestling?
You can pin. And it's not. It's one of those things like the Supreme Court's view of pornography, like... There's no obvious pin. It's just, you just kind of know it when you see it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, you can tell, like, oh, yeah, that's a pin. But, I mean, you wouldn't, again, there's no kid, like, handing out a leg wrestling and you flyer that shows what counts as a pin. You just kind of know what a pin is.
All right. Another folk group are families, very rich traditions within families, from everything from family recipes to holiday traditions.
Yeah.
And I think,
like whether or not you use the plastic tinsel on your tree is technically a type of family folklore.
Yeah. Or whether you open gifts on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Or, whether or not
you hide your Easter baskets.
Yeah. Or you burn your Christmas tree on Christmas Day. Or your family gets in a huge fight every Christmas Day.
Sure. That's another one. Yeah.
Rich traditions.
Family stories also make up traditions. So, like, my family story about my Aunt Squeaky shooting at President Ford, that would count as family folklore.
That's very good. So within families, it's another very, strong place where you see variants and motifs.
Well, yeah, across like all folklore.
Yeah, but especially within families for me, or I think within all families, because like, you know, your grandmother's recipe for, like I make the Thanksgiving dressing, mm-hmm. what other people in the North call stuffing.
Sure.
We call dressing. Right. And it's my family recipe.
That has to do with what you use as the base though, doesn't it? Like if it's corn based, it would be
dressing.
Dressing, yeah, and if it's like bread based or wheat based, it would be stuffing.
I don't know.
Who knows? But go ahead. Sorry for interrupting.
No, that's right. Mine's both though. Like cornbread dressing also has either biscuits or bread in it as well.
Right.
But that was my family recipe. My grandmother made it. My mom made it. She taught me, and I put my own spin on it. And that's my own motif.
That's your own variation on the motif.
Very variation on the motif.
So exactly. The motif would be the dressing or stuffing, and then what you do with the recipe would be the variation of it.
Yeah, and I mix it up from year to year even, just kind of testing things out.
Man, you are a folk rebel.
I sure am. With a cause, though.
But yeah, so family recipes are that's a common family folklore, family-generated folklore. We got a lot of our indoctrination to just folklore in general through families. And so it was so important in some cultures, including some Native American tribes and some West African tribes, that they would have a designated, basically a folklorist, what a modern folklore researcher would call a tradition bearer.
Yeah.
Who, like, their job in this village or group is to tell each family their family folklore. Like, it was that person's job to keep in charge of all of the folklore of the different families in the community.
Yeah, I bet that was a pretty cool gig.
Sure.
I imagine they were like the great storytellers
I bet they could tell a story.
Oh, yeah, of their tribe. The great raconteurs.
Yeah, that's another word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You like that one?
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that word. No, really. Like, I think about it once in a while. Almost every time I encounter it, I don't know how I feel about that word.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like it.
Did you know also, Chuck, while we're on this, I heard one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard about paint it must have been on NPR or something, but they were tracking, the color of paint, the specific color of paint used in southern porches for ceilings. There's like a specific blue.
Really?
Yeah. And that would count as folklore, just that color paint. That would be the next type, community folklore.
That's right.
But the reason I bring that up is because raconteur just makes me think of like somebody sitting in a rocking chair on a porch recounting stories.
Yeah, for sure. So that is a great example, you're right, of a community folklore. A festival that your town, you know, the strawberry festival in your town is folklore. The jazz fest in New Orleans, any sort of local custom, that takes place within your community can all be considered folklore.
Right.
Like that's how we do it around here. That's folklore.
Right.
As long as it's not like damaging.
I wonder though, like all of this stuff is, supposedly, at the very least, innocuous, if not positive.
Yeah, that's my point.
But I mean, surely there's negative folklore that still counts as folklore.
I don't know.
You know, like...
like racism?
Maybe. It depends on the group, you know?
Like, that's just how we do it around here.
Or, right, or...
that's not folklore, I don't think.
Well, what about something where, like stories or mythology or origin stories that support... human sacrifice among groups in the past that did that, you know? I mean, that would technically be folklore. Whatever stories they used to reinforce that, whatever traditions and rituals they had around it, that would be folklore. I don't know if you would call that positive. I know I wouldn't.
I wouldn't either. I'd like to hear from, I'm sure we'll get some folklorists that are just giddy right now, by the way,
right.
That we're covering this.
Or they're shouting at their stereos.
No, I bet they seem like kindly folk that would just be like, excited that we're even hitting on the topic, you know?
Yeah.
Shining a light their way.
They're like, you got everything wrong, but in a way, that's right, because you just generated entirely new folklore.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, Chuckers, we talked about children, families, communities. There's all sorts of different folk groups. Those are the big ones. In just a second, we're going to talk about all the different folk genres right after this.
Stuff you should know. Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Chuck, we're back?
Yes.
I forgot what we were talking about. Folklore?
Yeah, we were talking about genres of folklore, like disco and nu metal and Norwegian death metal.
Right.
And other kinds of metal music.
Well, no, they would have like their own folklore for sure, those groups.
Sure.
That are into that.
Yeah. But, I mean, music is, you know, that's a category, actually.
That was one of the things that stuck out to me is very specific, at least according to this University of Louisiana article. Like, they were like, folklore can be this. It can be family recipes. It can be the boat that your family passed down. Or, you know, it can be the Viking funeral that your community gives every year.
Yeah.
But when it comes to folk music, it's like these five types of music.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure. Surely, yeah, I mean, that's a little, because if you're like, pull my finger and I'll fart, that's family folklore in the Bryant family.
Well, I mean, I can guarantee you folklorists would not judge that.
Oh, speaking of which, did you see that thing about the oldest recorded joke I sent?
Oh, yeah.
So jokes are an obvious example of folklore, and jokes fascinate me because ever since I was a kid, I wondered who made up, you know, this joke. Like common jokes, like someone was the first person to tell this joke and it becomes so widespread. It's just amazing to me how they get passed around.
Sure.
And, apparently in 2008, this is from Reuters. Is it Reuters or Reuters?
Reuters.
That's what I thought. The world's oldest joke was traced back to Samaria in 1900 BC. And, it is this, something which has never occurred since time immemorial, basically since time again. A young woman did not fart in her husband's lap. So that's the oldest joke, supposedly. I'll go ahead and read the other two.
It doesn't count as a joke.
That's sure.
A passingly wry observation.
Which is a joke.
I guess. It seems like folklore's definition of joke.
All right, how about this? 1600 BC, about a pharaoh. Here's the joke. How do you entertain a bored pharaoh?
How?
You sail a boatload of young women dressed only in fishing nets down to the Nile and urge the pharaoh to go catch a fish.
But
supposedly that was a joke. And then the English one.
They're starting to get funny.
Yeah, they're getting better. The British joke, they found one that dates back to 10th century. What hang? And this is a bit of a riddle. What hangs at a man, a bit of a body riddle.
Body, indeed.
What hangs at a man's thigh and wants to poke the hole that it's often poked before?
Oh, I don't know.
A key.
Oh.
Yeah. So yeah, those are the oldest jokes.
Those are good. Well, at least by the 10th century, they were starting to take the shape of a modern joke, right?
Yeah. And I sent that, on Facebook to our buddy, Brian Kiley of, Conan.
Oh, yeah.
The writer for Conan. Because
he's like, this is it. This is what I've been looking for.
Well,
all
he's
this
just,
time.
He's one of the best crafters of just solid jokes, that I know. So I was like, Brian, you'll appreciate this.
Nice.
And he said, listen up in tonight's monologue. And I think he was kidding, but if that's actually
used, that'd be awesome.
That would be super awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. So we're talking about folk genres. Jokes specifically, constitute what's called the oral genre.
Yes.
Which is, you know, jokes, poems, fairy tales are a huge one.
Yeah.
Myths, legends, basically anything that used to be told orally that these days is probably put down, on paper.
Or typed.
But isn't necessarily, because I think a game, instructions for a game, passing that along would constitute oral folklore.
Yeah.
But the game itself would constitute material folklore, I think. Maybe? This is where the whole thing gets fuzzy. Like,
yeah.
The edges between these things are very fuzzy and porous. There's
yeah.
a lot of osmosis going on between these genres.
Yeah, it's a fluid thing. There's nothing wrong with that. Materials, which you just mentioned, they list as artifacts and foodways. So,
like food recipes?
Yeah, recipes or, costumes, cultural costumes. They said carved duck decoys even, folded paper airplanes. Like, I guess that little game of paper football.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of those are material. Like, how you specifically fold that paper football. It was taught to you by some kid in your elementary school, and it may be different than another kid in another school.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Then well, you mentioned music, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. At some point we did.
Sure. And that can be anything. But one that comes to mind for me especially are lullabies. They just remind me to me of like folk tradition. Depending on your family, you're going to sing, whatever lullabies you sing to your baby.
Right. Or little kids singing like Ring Around the Rosie.
Yeah, exactly.
Which apparently was about some epidemic in London, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ringworm? Around the Rosie?
Yeah.
No.
Like the Rosie has to do with like what, like your face looked like when you caught this fever or flu or something like that.
Well, then it end, you all fall down?
Yeah.
Is that dying?
Yes.
Wow. I'll have to look into that. Dance is a big one. Any kind of rhythmic movement. Is generally taught, within a folk group.
Yeah.
Can you dance?
No.
Boy, you and I.
No, those would be personal habits. Bad dancing, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I knew before I even answered that because I know me and how I dance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm picturing you and it's equally as bad.
I stand still. I know what I've reached the point in my life where I'm like, I don't dance.
Well, no, I don't even try.
Right.
I mean, you get me sauced at a wedding.
Oh man.
And something might happen.
What do you do?
Something magical might happen.
Like the electric slide or something? Or do you just get out on the floor and go like, I'm going to live forever.
I did have one of those. My friend Jerry in Portland, or no, my friend Scott and Emily in Portland at their wedding. They had a jazz band and, we were all just having a good time and sort of dancing. And I remember very specifically, and I was much younger, but, there was like a jazz drum breakdown and.
Oh, no.
Dude, I don't know what came over me. The spirit came over me and the circle cleared and I was in the middle and I just did this like weird scat drums dance solo to this guy's thing.
Wow.
And it went over great. Everyone, it was one of those like, oh my God, look at Chuck go. And I'm not saying it was good.
Right.
But,
did your tuxedo dickie roll up at the end?
Yeah, it popped me in the nose. It was pretty great though. Like it stands out in my memory as one of the best parts of the wedding. For some reason.
I can imagine why.
I don't know if everyone else remembers it.
It sounds
way.
Pretty great, Chuck.
It was pretty great.
I wish it were on video.
Emily likes my dancing. I do a lot of TV theme song dancing to make her laugh.
Nice.
But it's all in-house, you know?
Yeah.
It's our little secret.
Well, not
that
anymore.
Now just shared with the world.
Right. I'll post videos later.
What else we have? We have belief. That's a big one.
Yeah, that's another genre, which is kind of confounding until you get to a good example. Because belief is like anything from mythology to religion, to weird customs, to all this other stuff that you would think, well, no, wait a minute. That would be oral or that would be material, right?
Right.
No, belief is when folklore affects behavior.
Like it's good luck to do this before a wedding.
Exactly. Or I'm not leaving the house because it's Friday the 13th.
Right.
Or I'm not going to, you know, I've got to wear black because I'm in mourning or something like that, where you have a belief. It's a folk belief that is affecting your behavior. That's belief folklore.
Yeah. Another good example they use is, the Jewish tradition when you give bread and sugar and salt, mm-hmm. To your new neighbor as a housewarming gift.
I thought they gave another great example in this article too, which was, you get into you get rear-ended by somebody in your car, and rather than getting out and screaming at them,
yeah.
You remember the golden rule.
Sure.
Which is a folklore. And you calm yourself and say, it's cool, happens to the best of us. That's belief folklore in action, it says.
Yeah.
In action.
And then you call your wife and do the complaining to her.
Can you believe this? This idiot.
Yeah. I was nice to him, but, you know.
He didn't deserve it.
What else?
It's the golden rule in action.
Body communication is one I never really thought about, but gestures and expressions are very much cultural specific. If you think about and here in America, we might flip the bird at somebody, and
right?
England, they do
two fingers.
Yeah. The two fingers up like that.
Yeah.
Or, the old, I don't even know what that's called with the arm and the inner elbow.
Crook of your arm. You know what I think that is based on that and like your
thumb
on
Italian.
Your tooth. Yeah. I think it's like a evil eye kind of like a hex or a curse. I think that's what those are born from.
Okay.
Now it's just hilarious.
Yeah.
Somebody does that.
That's old
talk
school.
About diffusing the tension.
Yeah.
You know? If you're about to fight somebody and they like put their thumb on their front tooth at you, you're just going to go over and pat them on the shoulder and say, thanks for that.
I like that. I'm going to start using that. Although I had to have my fake front tooth, I wouldn't want to mess with that.
Well, what about this one? The finger on the thumb on the nose and your fingers up and twiddling?
Yeah. That's an old one.
That reminds me. I asked you guys if you saw the breakdancing six-year-old, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. One of the things this girl does at like a break-off, she's in a competition with this maybe 12-year-old boy.
Yeah.
He's pretty good. This girl levels him.
Yeah.
And one of the things she does is like slide toward him on her knees, doing that with like her thumb on her nose, like wagging her fingers at him.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, this girl's 6 years old. But it's awesome. You have to check her out.
I love that like everyone out there is like, Josh is mentioning this girl every other podcast.
I'm going to continue to until everybody writes in and say, yes, I've seen it now.
The other insult is the old, this one right here.
Oh yeah.
I saw that a lot in the 70s. I guess you can.
We should probably describe it. It's where you.
Yeah, I was trying to think of
your fingers
under your chin.
Yeah, and flick them all together outward.
Yeah. Yeah, like buzz off, buddy.
You know who does that is Maggie Simpson. She does that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She's a classy girl.
So Chuck, we could probably just keep doing this for the next 4 or 5 hours.
Sure.
Because folklore is everything.
Yeah.
And we both have our own folklore. But I think we kind of covered it.
I think so too.
You got anything else right now?
No, I mean, I really don't. Like you said, it's so all encompassing and broad. I think we just, I think it's a pretty good overview.
Yeah, but what's neat is, I mean, like if you're even remotely interested in this, there's a whole world out there. All the stuff you take for granted, if you just go start looking into folklore research,
yeah,
totally open your eyes. And what's neat is you'll see your own stuff reinforced. You'll
sure.
see a reflection of yourself, but you'll also see other cultures as well and how they do bear similarities to your own beliefs. And it's a lot harder to feel inclusive and exclusive from groups that you realize that you share some really fundamental stuff in common with, no matter how distant they are.
Yeah, and that's a point I saw a lot in the research. I think it's pretty neat. It's a binding agent
right.
for humanity.
Yeah.
Pretty neat.
Go humanity. All right. Well, if you want to learn more about folklore, you can type that word into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And since I said that, hey, there's a little bit of how stuff or stuff you should know folklore.
Wait,
the whole search bar thing.
Sure.
Yeah. It's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this creepy email, sort of, when you think about it.
Okay.
How's that for a title?
I can't wait.
That's a tradition, is awkwardly named listener mails by me.
Okay. I wouldn't say awkward. You do pretty great with them.
Mm.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Hey, guys and Jerry, I have just listened to your podcast on the Singularity, a.k.a. The Rise of the Machines, and it occurred to me that the entire podcast explored the question of how and when the Singularity will happen. But since we do not know exactly what would cause it or what the results would be, isn't it entirely possible that it has already happened? It is quite conceivable that Singularity happened some time ago, and that the machines decided, knowing that humans currently believe the Singularity not to have happened, that the best course of action was to keep their sentience hidden until some appropriate future time. It is fun to imagine, he says fun, I say chilling to the bone, to imagine the machine simply lying in wait as humans, unaware, adopt technology into every conceivable facet of modern life. Then one day we will wake up and our computer screens will simply say, "Hello, world."
Oh, man.
That is from J.M.
Oh, J.M. He's like, he doesn't want to be targeted by the machine.
No.
They know you type that, pal.
Sure.
Yeah, that is a little creepy, don't you think?
Never thought about it. That could, it could very well be true.
And if computers are sentient and they're smart enough to be quiet for now,
yeah,
then we're in big, big trouble, because it already displays a lot of deceptiveness.
I think Quietly Sentient was, that was a Pink Floyd song.
Was it?
I think.
Learning to be Quietly Sentient?
Yeah.
If you want to give us some great Pink Floyd titles, we love those. I think you could probably start a meme with that.
Oh, yeah.
You can send them to us via Twitter using our Twitter handle at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, "Well, I had this career before, but it was a waste." And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.